Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden age. I'm Mark LeVonier. We continue Christmas in this hour. Later on, Guest Star from 1947 with the story, Is There a Santa Claus? But right now, the second part and conclusion of Paul Whiteman's ABC Christmas Party, first heard on the network on Christmas Eve, 1946.
But right now, a lot of fine people out in Hollywood are waiting to share in our Christmas Eve fun. How about it, Hollywood? Come in, Don Wilson.
That was really wonderful, Pops. Now you and the Whiteman Band and all your New York guests can squat around the ABC Christmas tree while out here in Hollywood we take over our portion of the party. And we have a lot of your favorite old friends here with us for this occasion. Bing Crosby, Lummett Abner, Tom Brenneman, and Don McNeil. And our first ABC guest, that grand singer and exciting new comedian, Kenny Baker.
Oh, thanks, Don Wilson, and thank you, everybody. But, Don, I'm afraid I haven't too much time to spend with you this evening. You see, I've got to get back to Glamour Manor and get ready for my own Christmas party.
Well, that's all right, Kenny. We were sort of expecting a song, but if you're in a hurry, I'll sing.
Yeah. Oh, Don, you're kidding.
Oh, no, I'm not. I started in radio as a singer.
Yeah, and all that's left now is the body of Frank Sinatra.
Well, I'm serious, Kenny. I started in Denver in 1923 as a singer.
Oh, you did?
And in some places, I'm considered even bigger than Crosby.
Yeah. In some places, you are bigger than Crosby. In fact, Don, you've got places where places aren't even supposed to be.
Oh, you think I'm fat?
Well, what are those things around your middle? Tires?
Well, they're not fat.
Then what are they?
Tires.
Yeah. No wonder. You have the only belt buckle in Los Angeles that lights up and flashes Goodrich Silver Town.
Well, Kenny, since you can't stay and I have to go to the hotel and get some fresh clothes, how about all of us dropping over to Glamour Manor a little later on, huh?
Oh, Don, that'd be wonderful. And bring the whole ABC network with you, will you? Gee,
well,
ain't radio wonderful, folks?
That's a date, Kenny.
All right.
How are the Christmas preparations going on over at our little hotel?
Well, fine, Don, except for one thing. I can't get used to Christmas in Hollywood, you know. No snap in the air, no snow.
What do you mean? It's good and cold in California. It says here in this Florida paper.
Yeah. Well, it could be cold. I don't really know because a fan of Glamour Manor sent me a handmade quilt for my bed all the way from South Carolina.
Oh, one of those southern comforts. Oh, an excellent Christmas gift. Well, I see what you mean, but as long as I know that you're going to sing White Christmas, let's pause long enough for station identification.
All right, Don.
And now, Kenny Baker, accompanied by Harry Lubin's orchestra. The nationwide party is all yours.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used. Where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas with your days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be white. The sun is shining, the grass is green, the orange and palm trees sway. There's never been such a day in Beverly Hills, L.A. But it's December the 24th, and I am longing to be up north. Christmas card I write. May your days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be
Well, Kenny, snow or no snow, you certainly brought a breath of Christmas to all of us. And we'll be seeing you just a little later when we drop in on you at Glamour Mass.
Well, so long, Don, and don't forget, that's a date.
Okay. Well, what comes next is, I guess, something just a little new, even on a transcontinental radio program like this Christmas party. Because Tom Brenneman in Hollywood and Don McNeil in Chicago both have to be up with Santa Claus reindeer in the morning to do their own two shows, and they're not with us this evening in the studio. But instead, we've run special lines into the living room of Tom Brenneman's house out here and to Don McNeil's family, gathering two-thirds of the way across the country, not only so they can talk to each other and to you, but so they can both be with their families this Christmas Eve. So now that I've explained it, there's nothing left to do but just have our engineer throw the switch, which takes us to Tom Brenneman's home at Encino, California.
Thank you, Don. Thanks, Don.
Yeah, well, as Don just told you, there's someone else to make this a joint party. So I'll say hello to Don McNeil in the living room of his joint in Winnetka, Illinois.
Hello, Tom Brenneman. Merry Christmas from the Don McNeil family gathered here at home in our living room, but you know, Tom, calling this dump, this home, I've worked so hard for a joint, that wasn't the kindest introduction I've ever had.
Oh, wait a minute. Don't take it that way, Don. After all, it was only a joke in the spirit of the Christmas party.
Yeah, what a joke. I guess if that joke showed up as a guest on your program, you'd have to give it two orchids, huh? Merry Christmas, Tom.
Oh, thanks. Thank you very much, Don. But at least on my program, we don't have to march the audience around to wake them up again. Again, that is it. Merry Christmas, Don.
Thank you, Tom. Well, I just bet you're a scream there tonight in your own home wearing funny-looking hats to make your family roar. I can just see you. I don't have to wear anything.
You said what?
I don't have to wear anything.
Oh, isn't it a little chilly that way in Chicago now?
Yes, it is, Tom. Mm-hmm. Next month we pay the gas bill. You don't sound so hot yourself. Merry Christmas.
Oh, thank you, Don. Thank you very much, Ed. What do you mean, not so hot?
Huh?
I'm a movie star. My picture, Breakfast in Hollywood, was so big a success, the studio wants me to do another picture.
Well, you go right ahead. Don't you mind what everybody says about your last picture. I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
What's this one going to be, Lassie Move Over?
Oh, no. You know, Sam, Don.
Yeah?
You must show me the room where you age your old jokes.
Well, seriously, Tom, you know, it's too doggone bad we don't have a chance to really visit in each other's homes, but this is the next best thing. Swell talking to you. Neighbors, may this Christmas be the best one ever, and may the new year bring you all the things you want most for yourselves.
Well, thank you very much, Don. You know, it was great chinning with you on this Christmas Eve. And before you go, I've got a few in my family that I'd like to talk to a few in your family, huh?
Oh, great. Put them on, Tom.
Well, first, I want you to meet my wife. You've already met Billy.
Uh-huh.
And where's Kay?
Hello, Billy.
Hello, Kay. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, how do you like that? We don't get a chance, do we?
Well, no, we don't. It seems wonderful to hear your lovely laugh again.
Well, thank you. And it's very nice talking to you, too.
Well, thank you, Billy.
That'll be all. Goodbye.
Merry Christmas to you, and to Don, and the children.
Merry Christmas to you also, all of you.
Thank you.
Aren't you the boss in your house? Make your wife keep still, Tom.
Oh, he's not the boss.
Are you kidding?
No.
Say, Don.
Yeah.
How's the weather back there?
Oh, it's fine. Nice and brisk and cold. How's it out there, Tom?
Oh, it's lovely. It's now about, it's almost 5 minutes after 8, and it's raining cats and dogs.
No fooling.
Yes. Only we don't have dogs. Don.
Yeah.
Here's the member of my family you have met. My charming daughter, Gloria.
How do you do, Miss...
How do you do, Mr. McNeil?
How do you do, Mr. McNeil? Yes,
you can call me Mr. McNeil. That's all right. How are you, Gloria?
Well, I'm just fine.
Good. I'd like you to meet some of the younger
Come
members.
Come on, this American Broadcasting Company Christmas party.
Of my
so,
family. Tom.
Ladies and gentlemen, they're great. Really,
Hi,
great
Gloria.
Families.
I'm Tom McNeil.
If we let them, they'd
Hello,
go right on talking until
Hi,
New Year's Eve.
Everybody,
so,
I'm Bobby
why don't you say that we fade them out
Bobby,
and
Bobby,
as they go on doing what comes naturally, and we return to the ABC studios here in Hollywood. Lubin's orchestra setting the pace with a topical, tuneful, and timely toy trumpet. A date to visit Kenny Baker at Glamour Manor, the heartbreaking, half-baked hostelry he operates on the outskirts of Hollywood. Outskirts of Hollywood? Sorry, that must be a typographical error. In Hollywood, it's got to be out slacks. Well, with a little help from Harry Lubin in the orchestra, we're on our way now to Kenny Baker and Glamour Manor.
Glamour Manor, 32 rooms and 2 baths. Kenny Baker, owner manager speaking. Over. What's that? I'm sorry, I didn't quite get your name. Who? I met you in a hospital? Oh, hello, Mother. Oh, sure, you bet. Well, I wouldn't miss it. I'll be home with you tomorrow for Christmas dinner, yeah. Goodbye, dear.
Well, Kenny, here I am to find out what's going on at Glamour Manor on Christmas Eve. Where's Slap and Miss Biddle and Barbara?
Well, gosh, Don, they're all out doing their last-minute Christmas shopping. But doesn't the hotel look swell?
Yes, it does, Kenny. But, hey, what's that suitcase doing over there in the middle of the lobby?
Oh, well, the man in 309 asked me to help him pack it, so I Save whom I packed him in it, too.
Yeah, but you left one of his arms sticking out.
Well, gee, how else would he be able to carry it? Oh, excuse me, Don. Hello? Grammar Manor, rates by the day, month of the week. When it rains in Hollywood, the hotel's up the creek. Over the dam.
Hello? Hello, room clerk? What have you got in the single room?
A married couple.
Now, that's no way to talk to a prospective guest, Kenny.
Well, Don, the hotel's full up anyhow. I mean, I guess everyone's heard about our Christmas party, and that each guest gets a free gift.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're giving every guest a Christmas present, huh?
Yeah, I certainly am. Would you like a book?
Oh, I'd like that a lot.
Well, swell. How about Little Women?
I'd like that even better. Yes. What are you giving Miss Biddle?
Well, Don, I'm giving Miss Biddle a beautiful fur.
You giving Miss Biddle a beautiful fur?
Sure.
On whose money?
Mine. Why, do you think I'm cheap?
Well, all I know is that Barbara told me you invited her out last week. Dutch treat.
Yeah. Well, what's wrong with going Dutch?
Well, do you have to show up wearing wooden shoes?
Oh, no.
Just what kind of a fur are you getting, Miss Biddle, Kenny?
Well, I don't know yet, Don. I was busy when I saw Miss Biddle go out, so I gave the boy next door the money, and he went out and bought it and put it up in her room as a surprise.
This I have to see, and I have to go upstairs to my apartment, so I'll just slip into her room and look for myself.
Well, go ahead, Don, and tell me what you think of the fur. You know, I'm awfully anxious to find out.
Okay, Kenny, I'll be back in two shakes of a cat.
Yeah, okay.
Mr. Baker, I have a bone to pick with you.
Yes, you haven't put on a pound, have you, Mrs. Bindlestiff?
Last week, I gave you a package to mail to my niece, marked Fragile China. She just phoned me that it never arrived.
Well, of course not. She won't get that package for at least a month.
At least a month? Why not?
Madam, have you any idea how far it is to Fragile China?
Oh, Mr. Baker, you're a nincompoop. A complete nincompoop.
Gee, I thought I had some parts missing.
Hey, Kenny, something terrible's happened.
Well, what's the matter, Don? You look as pale as a sheet. Double bed size, of course.
Oh, I'm not kidding, Kenny. I just went up to Miss Biddle's room and there are no furs there.
No,
there's nothing in her room but a little Christmas tree.
Oh, my goodness, this is awful, Don. Why, we've been robbed.
Well, that's what I think. We ought to call the police.
Now, wait a minute. I should say not. I know how to solve crimes. What do you think I do nights when I can't sleep?
Read detective stories?
No, drink Ovaltine. Now, come on, Wilson. We're going up and solve that crime.
Well, now, you just better get a hold of yourself, Kenny. You're kind of panicky, and you're shaking more than the last man on a conga line.
Why, what are you talking about? There's never been a quitter in the Baker family. No, sir. My father used to tell me, son, the Bakers don't know what it means to quit. Son, the Bakers don't know the meaning of failure. Son, the Bakers don't know what it means to be afraid. I guess we were pretty a stupid family, weren't we? But I'm going to solve this crime or my name isn't Roger Strongheart.
But your name isn't Roger Strongheart.
I know. I'm just leaving myself a loophole. Now, come on, Don. We got to go up to Miss Biddle's room.
Kenny, open Miss Biddle's door.
Well, first tell me one thing. Is there anybody in her room by the name of Ruth?
Ruth? Of course not.
Uh-huh. Just as I thought. Another ruthless crime.
Oh, Kenny. Kenny, that's plain stupid.
Oh, yeah? Well, I may see dumb to you, Don Wilson, but when somebody tries to outsmart me, they can do it every time.
Oh, Kenny. Now, come on, I'll open the door.
Okay.
See? Nothing in here but a little Christmas tree.
Oh, Don, you're right. And I know the boy put the fur up here because I asked him about it.
Yeah, but that isn't finding anything.
Now, let's be scientific. Who would steal a fur?
A woman.
Right.
Therefore, I think there must be a woman hidden in the closet, and I'm going in after her.
Oh, Don, if you're right, you'd better let me go with you.
Nonsense. I'll go in after that woman alone. And if I whistle like this, she's dangerous.
Yeah.
And if I whistle like this, stay out. I'll handle her myself.
Now, wait a minute, Don. Oh, look, here comes the boy from next door.
Hello, Mr. Baker. I'm glad you're up here.
Now, looky here, young man. What did you do with the fur I told you to buy for Miss Biddle?
Well, gee, Mr. Baker, it's right there on the table.
On the table? There's nothing on that table but a little Christmas tree. Now, what did you do with all that money I gave you to buy a fur?
All that money? Well, jeepers, that tree ain't a pine or a hemlock. I got the best-looking fur Christmas tree I could get for your 97 cents.
Thank you.
thank you, Kenny Baker, for making my personal hotel that entertaining. I'll be seeing you every morning five times a week. And now, for another little visit away from ABC's Hollywood studios and a trip to Pine Ridge, Arkansas, this Christmas Eve to visit our delightful old friends, Lum and Abner.
Simmer down for a minute.
Ah.
I want you to listen while I run through this poem I'm going to recite at the Youngin's Christmas party tonight.
You going to recite a poem?
Yeah.
Oh, me, I love to hear a peace folk. I love it.
They wanted somebody with a good speaking voice and lots of personality.
Natural. But you'll do just as well, Lum. What poem are you going to recite?
It's a Christmas poem.
Well, sir, now, you chose a good topic for this time of year. You sure did.
I thought it sort of fit in good.
Yes, yes.
But you stand there and listen.
Yeah, go ahead. I just love Christmas. Happy Yuletide. Just love it.
'Twas the night before Christmas.
What was it, Lum?
I said, 'twas the night before Christmas.
Oh, I enjoy Christmas, my favorite holiday. Well, go ahead, Lum. Start your poem. I'm dying to hear it.
Well, keep still, then.
Yeah, go ahead.
'Twas the night before Christmas.
Oh, that's sweet. I just love it.
And all through the house,
all
not a creature.
All through whose house?
Just any house. And all through the house, not a creature was.
Oh, it's a vacant house, huh?
No, there's a family living in it. Got some youngins.
The Bates's place?
Not necessary.
Well, they got youngins, little Doody and Doocy.
All right. Make it the Bates's then.
Yeah. Can't understand why it's so quiet around there, though. There's the noisiest two little brats I ever know. Well, go ahead, Lum.
'Twas the night before Christmas and all through the house. What's the matter now?
All through the Bates's house.
All right. 'Twas the night before Christmas and all through the Bates's house.
Yeah.
Not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
He might be caught in a trap.
Keep it. I'm out. Their stockings
were... The mouse's stocking?
No, silly.
Well, I was going to say, no wonder they couldn't hear the mice if they run around their stocking feet. But go ahead.
Their stockings was hung by the chimney with care.
Oh, that's sweet.
In the hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
Who in the world is Nick Lassoon?
Who?
At Nick Lassoon, you said you hoped he'd be there.
I said, in the hopes that St. Nick Lassoon would be there.
Yeah.
That's Santa Claus.
Oh, I see, yeah.
The children
That's
were...
the first time I ever heard him call Nick Lassoon. But, it's your poem. You go ahead, do it the way you want
I'm trying to.
Yeah.
The children were nestled all snug in their beds.
That's Doody and Dulcie. Yeah, bless their hearts.
While visions of sugar plums danced through their heads.
Bless their little. Visions? Well, no wonder they're quiet. Them youngins are sick.
Stop interrupting, would you? Let's see, where was I at?
Damn poor little varmint.
Oh, yeah, dance. And Mama in her kerchief.
Miss Bates dancing at that time of the night?
And I in my cap.
Was you over there dancing with Miss Bates?
Oh, for goodness sake.
Well, Lum, you ought to have taken your cap off. It ain't polite to dance with your cap off.
I weren't over there dancing with Miss Bates.
Who was it?
I don't know.
Well, I bound you I can guess pretty close to who it was.
Who?
That Nick Lassoon.
Abner, will you just hash up and listen? I got me mixed up. I forget where I was at in the poem.
Nick and Miss Bates was dancing.
Yeah. Or no.
They're going to wake up the kids, too, if they ain't careful.
And Mama in her kerchief. And
in her what?
Kerchief.
Kazunkai.
And I in my cap.
Yeah, you better keep your cap on, Lum, long as you're catching cold, sneezing that away. Go ahead.
When out on the lawn, there arose such a clatter.
Old man Bates coming home.
Just listen to the poem and you'll find out what it was.
Yeah, go ahead. I'd love to find out what that racket is. I still think old man Bates is mixed up in it somewhere.
I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter.
Dogus, could you hear it clean over to your place?
Admiral, will you keep quiet?
That's more likely how you caught that cold, Lum, running around your nightshirt. Go ahead.
Away to the winder, I flew like a flash.
Good for
are you?
Tore open the shutters and threw up the sash.
Just barely made it, huh?
The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to objects below.
Mom, don't change the subject. What was that racket going on out there in the yard?
I'm coming to it. When what to my wondering eye should appear but a miniature sleigh and eight tiny reindeer?
Eight tiny... Lawmakers, do you actually claim you've seen a herd of midget reindeers run around the Bates' yard?
I told you to keep quiet. More rapid than eagles
here. Nice rabbits and eagles, it doesn't matter.
He whistled and shouted and called them by name.
Mom, you better lay down. That cold's give you a fever.
Get away from me, Abner. Now, Dasher. Now, Dancer. Now, Prancer.
Mom, calm down now, Lom.
On, Comet. On, Cupid. On, Donder and Blitzen.
Hey, Lom, watch your language. Watch your language.
Well, howdy, 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 howdy. Merry Christmas.
Oh,
Merry Christmas.
Well, howdy, Grandpap. Doggies, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, it's time to go on over to the Christmas party. You fellas ready?
Grannies, I am. I'm getting out of here right now.
Hey, wait a minute. Lom, come back now. Hey, Lom! Oh, me, Grandpap, this is the worst one Christmas I ever seen.
Why? What's the trouble?
Well, ain't you here?
No.
Well, Lom's got to go over and recite a poem when he's so sick he's got the hallucinations. The little Bates is younger, laid up with the visions, and their mama's downstairs dancing with the Mr. Lassoon. Old man Bates is out in the yard raising a ruckus you can hear all over town. You better go on over the party, Grandpap, by yourself.
Well, ain't you coming?
No, I think I better stay here and wait for the call.
What call?
Why, the one from the corner. If old man Bates ever catches them two in there dancing and carry on, that Nick Lassoon's a dead goose.
As you can see, it's certainly a different kind of Christmas down there in Old Pine Ridge, but it sure is entertaining. But here in Hollywood, we have our own idea of Christmas entertainment, and I think it's not just our idea. It's the idea of everyone in the entire country. Bing Crosby!
Thank you, Don. There's a simple story filled with promise. What happened on December 24th, which was written almost 2,000 years ago. This being another Christmas Eve, I'd like to read again the story of the Nativity from the book of Luke, chapter 2. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And all went to be taxed, everyone into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, into the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the fields, keeping watch over the fields by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were not afraid. And the angel said to them, "Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. This shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in the manger." And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of heavenly hosts, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men." Oh, little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie above thy deep and dreamlessly, the silent stars go by. Yet in thy dark street shineth the everlasting Christmas, everybody, and good night.
Bing, that was great. Thanks, thanks so much. And so, with a final Christmas greeting from all of us here in Hollywood, we now go back to Paul Whiteman in New York.
This is Paul Whiteman back in New York with a very warm feeling about the heart and a large lump in the throat. I want to extend my sincere thanks to all who helped to make ABC's big Christmas party a big success. Most particularly, I want to send a message of good hope and cheer to all our servicemen and women who are still in the hospitals, the brave men who've offered the greatest gift of all as they fought for the one who was born this day, the Prince of Peace. To them and to each of you everywhere, heaven's best blessings be upon you. And now to all a happy Christmas, and to all a good night.
Paul Whiteman's ABC Christmas Party was broadcast to all our servicemen and women everywhere through worldwide shortwave facilities. The Hollywood portion of the program was directed by Larry Robertson and Paul Franklin. The New York program was produced and directed by Charles Harrell, with special music by Bernard Green. Good night. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Paul Whiteman's ABC Christmas Party, on Tuned to Yesterday from Christmas Eve 1946. At the time, Paul Whiteman and his 31-piece orchestra was at the helm for the Philco radio-sponsored program, the Radio Hall of Fame, heard Sunday evenings at 6, drawing close to 8 million listeners a week, though the program would fold just 4 months after that Christmas party broadcast on ABC. Whiteman's career would continue on the network, on radio, and what would become a 100-episode television run of Paul Whiteman's Good Year Review that would end up maintaining his familiar Sunday night slot he enjoyed on radio. And you're listening to an hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark LeVonier. Now a broadcast of Guest Star, a syndicated episode from December 21st, 1947. The title, Is There a Santa Claus?
The United States Savings Bonds Division presents Guest Star. How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is your host, Roger Pryor, introducing another in a series of transcribed feature programs known as Guest Star, brought to you each week by this station and United States Savings Bonds as a public service. They serve as a pleasant reminder that there's no finer way to set up a financial reserve than through the regular purchase of United States Savings Bonds. Today, our guest star...
Oh, I'm sorry, Roger, but I'm supposed to take over at this point.
Well, Wynn Elliott, what are you doing here?
Well, the Savings Bonds Division thought it might be a good idea if I handled the introductions this week.
Well, why on earth
well,
do they...
Well, you just listen, Roger, and I think you'll get the idea. Ladies and gentlemen, we have two special guests this week. First, we'll have a special Christmas message from the screen's outstanding actress, Miss Greer Garson. And second, we're to hear a special Christmas playlet featuring a man whose voice has long been familiar to you on the air and who's appeared in many successes on stage and screen, Mr. Roger Pryor.
Oh, so that's it. I might have suspected something of the sort.
Well, here's your part in the drama, Roger. You can read it over while Harry Sosnick and the Savings Bonds Orchestra open our program with a special arrangement of the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy and Dance Trepak from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite. the first of our guest stars, Mr. Roger Pryor, in a sketch that is particularly appropriate for this time of the year. Is there a Santa Claus?
It was just the other evening that I dropped in for a quiet chat with some friends of mine. They're a couple of grand people, typical of so many of today's young married folks. And I won't deny that one of the reasons why I liked to visit them was their little daughter, age 8, named Virginia. We're real pals, Virginia and I. She calls me her Uncle Roger, and I like it, too. Well, when the door opened the other night, there was an old little 8-year-old to greet me. I was worried for a minute, thought she might be sick. But no, it wasn't anything like that. She was up in her room, and she wanted to see me. I could see from the look on her parents' faces that something was wrong, so I rushed right upstairs to find out. As I opened the door, I called out, "Hello, Virginia. What's going on here?"
"Uncle Roger, oh, I'm so glad you've come."
"Well, I promised you I'd be here again before Christmas time, so here I am." "Hey, you've been crying. What's the trouble?"
"It's just that, well, at school today, that bad Tommy Wagner and Walter Royal, they said an awful thing."
"They did, did they? What did they say?"
"I told Mama and Daddy about it, but they didn't answer right away like I wanted them to, so I wondered if maybe Tommy and Walter are right. You'll tell me for sure, won't you, Uncle Roger? For really sure?"
"Well, of course I will, Virginia, when I know what they said."
"Well, they said there isn't any Santa Claus."
"They did they?" "Well, no wonder you were upset. And so you want me to tell you the really honest-to-goodness truth, is that it?"
"Yes. Yes, Uncle Roger. The really honest-to-goodness truth."
"Well, Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They've been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They don't believe, except they see. They think that nothing can be which isn't comprehensible to their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant in his intellect, as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole of truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist. And you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. How dreary would be the world if there was no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There'd be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus? Why, you might as well not believe in the fairies. You might get your daddy to hire men and watch in all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus, but even if they didn't see him coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees him. But that's no sign there isn't any Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing on the lawn? Of course not. But that's no proof they aren't there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders that are unseen and unseeable in the world. You can tear apart a baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside. But there's a veil covering the unseen world which not the strongest man, nor even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived, can tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, and romance can push aside the curtain and picture the supernal beauty and glory beyond. Is it all real? Virginia, in all this world, there's nothing else real and abiding. No Santa Claus. Thank God he lives and lives forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia, yes, 10 times 10,000 years from now, he'll continue to make glad the heart of childhood."
Thank you, Roger Pryor. Now, friends, here's Harry Sosnick and the Savings Bonds Orchestra continuing our holiday festivities with Mr. Sosnick's own arrangement of The March of the Toys from Victor Herbert's immortal Babes in Toyland. And now it's our pleasure to bring to this microphone one of the most beloved actresses the screen has ever known. I'm sure that what she has to say will strike a responsive chord in the hearts of every one of us. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Greer Garson.
Hello, everyone. May I come in on your radio for a moment to greet you during this holiday season? Christmas really is the family holiday, isn't it? I hope you're all looking forward to a happy reunion in your home. I expect you're busy planning your gifts already. And speaking of gifts, I have a suggestion to make. This year, why not give the present with a future? Why not make this a Christmas season that looks ahead, that in these uncertain times brings a measure of security to those you love? There is a sure way to this security, a sure way because it's an automatic way. And that's through the regular purchase of United States savings bonds. As you tuck the children under the covers and kiss them goodnight, wouldn't it give you an especially warm feeling to know that their needs in the years to come are being taken care of through a constantly growing reserve of savings bonds? You can arrange such a reserve through the payroll savings plan where you work, or if you are self-employed, through the bond a month plan where you bank. There is no finer, safer investment in the world today than United States savings bonds. Give bonds this Christmas as an investment in your future and an investment in your country.
Thank you, Miss Greer Garson. You've heard another in the series of transcribed feature programs known as Guest Star, brought to you at this time each week by this station and United States Savings Bonds as a public service. Our thanks to the New York Sun for permission to adapt their famous editorial, Is There a Santa Claus? The editorial written by Francis Church, which first appeared in the Sun in 1897. Tune in again next week for another fine show. Meanwhile, this is Roger Pryor reminding you that for safety and profit, you can't beat United States savings bonds.
Guest star on Tuned to Yesterday from the 21st of December, 1947, a syndicated episode. In that broadcast, we heard from film star Greer Garson, known to many as Mrs. Miniver, for her on-screen and Oscar-winning performance in that role. And she wasn't heard on radio very often, but in terms of Christmas, she was in a well-regarded broadcast of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense, in 1953, marking her second and last performance on the show, in a story called 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. And before we wrap up this hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday, here's an excerpt from 1935 and the syndicated program Origin of Superstition, which dedicated a full episode to the origin of the kissing under the mistletoe superstition. And here's the first bit of that broadcast.
Oh, hello, Ruth. What a splendid place to find you, right under the mistletoe. Ah, I claim my kiss.
Oh, good heavens, Roger. I didn't see that mistletoe. Oh, why did you kiss me? Now I'll be married within a year, and I don't want to be.
Don't want to be? Why, of course you do, Ruth. With a fine fellow like Jerry for a fiance, you don't mean to tell me.
But not so soon, Roger. I made Jerry promise he'd wait 2 years before we were married, until I had a chance to get started on my career. Now you kissed me under that mistletoe and spoiled everything.
Ruth, you don't mean to tell me you really believe in that old superstition?
Well, I surely do. After all, it's a belief that even my grandmother had. A girl who is kissed under the mistletoe will be married within a year.
But, Ruth, that superstition started through ignorance, and not in your grandmother's day, but thousands of years ago. In fact, it was in ancient Babylonia that superstition originated because of the remarkable experience of the daughter of a nobleman in that country.
You mean they used the mistletoe in those days, Roger?
Exactly, Ruth. You see, among ancient people, the mistletoe was regarded as sacred because it grew upon branches of trees and was not rooted in the ground. Consequently, they believed it was a divine plant, fallen from heaven, that possessed magical powers to protect them from evil.
Quite a beautiful idea, but very fantastic, wasn't it?
Yes. But to get to the connection of the mistletoe with the kiss, we must go back into the days of pagan worship of the goddess of love. In Babylonia, this goddess was known as Melita, whom every girl was called upon to serve once in her life, by going to her temple and taking a place beneath the sacred mistletoe, where she was obliged to accept the caress of any stranger who uttered the words, "I invoke the goddess Melita," and he gave the girl a coin.
What a strange custom that was.
Well, so it seems to us. But to the people of that time, the sacrifice of one's honor in worship to a god or a goddess was considered the highest form of nobility.
Well, I'm glad I didn't live in those days, Roger.
I should say.
An excerpt of the syndicated series Origin of Superstition from 1935 on Tuned to Yesterday, closing this hour of old-time radio Christmas shows. Be sure to be with us again for more programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Lipponier. Happy holidays.